Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. And I'm joined by Jeff Rimebold. Everything is good in the world, Jeffrey. The BC Lions get off to a winning start. I've just been back from a good trip with Jacksonville and Philadelphia. And England won their first World Cup game. Perfect.
It can't get any better than that. We hit for the hat trick or hit for the cycle or whatever you call it. I gotta tell you, you made me giggle so much the other day when I'm following you on Twitter, and you said Coughlin time is alive and well. He shows up 15 minutes early for his interview.
Oh my goodness, Jeff, that was an interview that was done in a different part of the stadium. So on Monday, last Monday, I was with the Jags, and we had this big area with the practice field looking out the back, and we did most of our interviews there. Then we had the interview with Coach Coughlin. They still call him Coach all around the building. And I was kind of warned, you know, you've got to be, it's 2:30, but be set up, everything ready to run at 2 o'clock. And then must have been like three different PR guys kind of came in to check this room. We were in the officials' locker room. So we're in the officials' locker room, which is tiny and not very luxurious. And they even at one point sent in the cleaner to clean the officials' locker room in preparation for Tom Coughlin coming down to do our interview. And then, of course, he shows up 15 minutes early and he's ready to roll, you know, and he's kind of making a little bit of small talk while we're fixing the lights and just before we're getting going. And then as soon as we finish the interview, he's up out of the chair, gives you a firm handshake, and he's on his way. But, Jeff, we could talk about the Jags and the Eagles in a second, but, you know, you just have those moments where you're struck by some sort of thing when you meet someone. And all I could think was, the Giants moved on from this guy for Ben McAdoo. Coach Coughlin could still coach right now. He's got the energy, he's got the passion, and he's still got that desire, and it comes across whenever you speak to the man.
Yeah, you know what, Neil, it's interesting you say that, because I remember when I met him for the first time, and this was, gosh, it's probably been about 10 years ago, and I was at the Giants facility, and it's amazing. He almost, those blue eyes he's got, they are so intense, he almost looks right through you when he's talking to you. So it's good to hear that he still has the passion burning inside of him.
And Jeff, I love the dynamic when you get, you know, I'm very fortunate to get up close to these players and these teams. And the Jags absolutely rolled out the red carpet. We interviewed Doug Marrone, Coach Coughlin. We interviewed Blake Bortles, Leonard Fournette, Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Yannick Ngakoue, Telvin Smith, Jalen Ramsey. I mean, it was a stellar lineup.
Who the hell did you not interview?
I know.
Did you get the equipment guy too?
It was fantastic. It was a stellar lineup from the Jags. And when you speak to the players, they are a bolshy group. They do not mind telling you that they are the best team in the NFL in their opinion. You know, they are confident. They are, I suppose they're a little bit cocky, but they back it up on the field a lot of times. So anyway, the players were talking a really, really good game. And it's kind of refreshing, because so often you hear this whole one game at a time thing. And, you know, the players in Jacksonville are not doing any of that, Jeff. You know, they're talking Super Bowl. And Calais Campbell was reeling off the great defenses of the past, the Steelers from the 70s, the New York Giants in the 86 season, the Bears of 85, you know, the Broncos of 2015, the Seahawks of 2013. And he said that we're better than all of them. We can be the best defense in the history of the NFL. And so I asked Telvin Smith about that comment that Calais Campbell had made. And Telvin Smith, Jeff, he said, you know, I think I'm the best linebacker in the NFL, but I know I'm on the best defense in the NFL. They were just tremendous for their confidence. And then, of course, you sit with Coach Coughlin and he's like, well, we could be a bit better at this. We could be a bit better at that. I'd like to see a few more wins. And it just reminded me that, you know, Coughlin and Marrone are going to try and keep their feet on the ground in Jacksonville. But that's going to be quite a task.
Well, it sounds like expectations, at least amongst the football team, are out, you know, like through the stadium roof. I mean, I think that that's going to be one of the hardest things for Marone and Coughlin to manage. Is, you know, it's really a delicate thing, as you know, Neil, between confidence and overconfidence. And I think Jacksonville, rightly so, should feel confident going into this season. But, you know how it is in professional football. It's hard to win every week. So to say things like you're going to be the greatest defense of all time, you want them to have confidence, but that's a mouthful.
Jeff, these interviews will run on Sky Sports during the 2018 season. They'll also make up several features in the game programs that sell around the games in Wembley Stadium and Tottenham Hotspur this year. But I thought it was interesting sitting with Leonard Fournette as well, and he sort of set the stage for thinking this kind of outspoken sort of nature will become a bit more of the norm in the NFL. He said that's just how younger players are today. You know, they're on social media a lot. They put themselves out there, and he said that they're not afraid to make those kind of comments. And that he also pointed out that Jacksonville recently have drafted a lot of players from winning college programs, and that's why they have that sort of confidence. And that made me kind of sit up and sort of take notice that, you know, sometimes it's about the college that they get drafted out of as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. When you take players who come from winning programs that are used to winning, that understand the price that you have to pay to win, that have been coached hard, particularly in college, that's why a lot of people love Alabama players for that very reason. Mm. You know, they know that they're going to come to the NFL having been coached hard, having, you know, been held accountable, having done the right things, you know, in practice, on the field, all that stuff. And it carries over. You know, you get guys from programs where they've struggled. Doesn't mean they can't be great NFL players, certainly, but it does mean that they have to learn how to win. And that's, you know, that again, that's part of the whole deal, is changing the culture of a team. And I think that's what's indicative of what's gone on in Jacksonville in the last couple of years, Neil. And I think, really, frankly, some of the credit still needs to go to the previous regime. Mm. You know, they took that thing when it was about, you know, when the wheels had come off of it, and they built and built and built with an eye towards the future. And sadly, you know, for Gus and his crew, they didn't get to see the fruits of their labor. But obviously, Marone and Coughlin have taken it to the next level, and I think that's one of the reasons why they are so confident, and why, you know, again, I agree with what Leonard's saying in that regard, that this is a different kind of kid coming into the National Football League today. They are much more likely to tell everybody how good they think they are. And then, again, they say, you know, proving it is different than talking it. And I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. We'll just move on there. Just briefly touch on the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Then we'll talk a little bit of NFL news. We'll continue our state of the franchise with the Atlanta Falcons, New Orleans Saints and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we'll take your questions in the mailbag. But Jeff, just one last thing on the Jags. They are a new breed of player, but they're wonderfully old school as well. At the end of the minicamp practice that I was watching, they were running the wind sprints and doing the grass drills. I mean, it's like I was expecting Vince Lombardi to kind of come out from under the bleachers at one point and start screaming at them.
Well, you know, I think that's what's really interesting about this, because there are no, I guess I don't want to make an overstatement, but I think there are few people in the National Football League that are more traditional and old school in terms of the work ethic that it takes. And, you know, you're talking about the up downs and all of the Vince Lombardi drills and the gassers and all of that, than Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone. The foundation of what they have built is based upon hard work. And I think that, again, is one of the reasons why they can say with some gravitas that they are ready to now take that next step. They're an ascending team that's very, very talented, and know that they're tough, and know that they've worked to put in the work. And again, I think that's part of it, Neil. When you've done the work, then you're confident that you're going to go into games and you're going to be prepared both physically and mentally and emotionally, and you're going to have a chance to win. And I think that's what the Jags are saying.
I went on from Jacksonville to Philadelphia, spent a day with the Super Bowl champions, interviewed Zach Ertz, Nelson Aguilar, Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Graham. No Carson Wentz or Doug Peterson on this trip, so I've got to go back in training camp to grab those guys. But, Jeff, it was clear from just watching, you know, Carson Wentz is a little way off yet. I mean, they had him in the individual drills. They had him in a little bit of 7-on-7. As soon as it went to team, he was out of there. But then he wasn't just kind of standing around on the side watching. This is where you look at the amount of work that NFL players put in. They're never standing still. They're like, so Carson Wentz comes off when team drills are going on. At one point, he's sprinting up and down the sidelines with a huge dumbbell weight attached to his back via a belt. The next period of team drills, he's practicing rolling out and throwing passes to the trainer. I mean, so he's working his way back, but obviously it makes sense to keep him out of all those live drills until they get to training camp. And Jeff, just the big takeaway for me from the Eagles that I did get to speak to was, A, how much they recognized what it meant to the city of Philadelphia to win that Super Bowl. I think we all saw that with the incredible parade just a week after they beat the Patriots. But also, they all recognize that they can't play that underdog card anymore. They're going to have a big target on their backs, and they're sort of embracing that side of it. So complete 180 from where they were trying to play the underdog card in the playoffs. They're quite happy now to be the big dog.
Yeah, and again, this is now one of the things that Doug's going to have to manage with his football team. Is now you're no longer the long shot. You're no longer the Cinderella story. You're no longer that. You know that message has been done, and now it's you are expected to be amongst the elite in the National Football League. You're expected to win your division. You're expected to go deep into the playoffs, and that's a whole nother level of issues and a whole nother level of expectations that, you know, both the players and the coaches and everybody inside that organization is going to have to manage. That's why, again, Neil, consistency is so difficult to attain, because you're now trying, you've now got to get everybody back on the same page. You've got to get everybody back on message. You've got to get everybody back on point. And you know as well as I do, the one thing that people love more than anything else is to take credit. And it's difficult when you're a, you know, Super Bowl champion and everybody's trying to tell you how good you are, and you know how you know individually the players are hearing from people that, well, you're the reason that they won, and yada 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 yada. And to get all that, you know, to go through that and be able to wash all that out and realize you got to go back to work, because the only, you know, everybody's 0-0 right now, and it's the work you put in now is what's going to carry you in the season.
Jeff, just as we look at the mini camps, and I talked about Carson Wentz, and I want to get into some of the big names that were holding out during mini camp, or at least limited in their participation in mini camps, because they're looking for new contracts, and some of those could rumble into the training camp and the early part of the preseason games, and maybe even into the season itself, the regular season, which kicks off in September. But obviously they're holding Carson Wentz out of team drills. And I noticed when I was in the US last week that Odell Beckham Jr., who's looking for a new deal with the New York Giants, took part in all the individual stuff and some 7-on-7, but then refused to take part in team drills, even though they're not hitting all the way to the floor. Clearly, this is the bit that players are concerned about and teams are concerned about if there was going to be an injury.
Yeah, you know what? And again, this is the tough thing, you know, because you mentioned about Wentz. Well, obviously, they want him out of the team drills. Why? Because you don't want bodies around him. You don't want somebody to fall on him. You don't, you know, all of those things. The risk factor is just so high. And it's one thing to take a guy out for medical reasons. This is just another one of the things that frustrates me about OBJ, because you're there, you go through the individual drills, you go through the stuff that you choose to go through, but then when it comes to team, you turn your back on your team. And it sends completely the wrong message. But again, that's the athlete we're dealing with.
It's clearly trying to send a message, though, Jeff, as well.
Oh, no question. Don't think that it's not premeditated. I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he did. Let's look at some of those players that held out of mini camps, and I guess they're looking for long-term deals. Le'Veon Bell being one for Pittsburgh. Is that a, that one might be one of the most worrying, mightn't it, Jeff? Because he did sit out all of last year's preseason, right up until the eve of the new season, and then made quite a slow start by his standards, didn't he, to 2017?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's one of the things that you worry about. His was not as unexpected to me, Neil, as Julio's was, and I think, you know, if you're sitting in the Steelers chair, you're probably saying, okay, that's just Le'Veon. But Julio Jones has always been, at least from everything that we've heard, he's always been a 100% team guy, a guy that was, you know, concerned not about his stats but about team success. And you know how important for Dan Quinn and that Falcon organization the whole brotherhood thing is. Well, now if you're choosing to not come into camp, and you're out working out with whomever, that doesn't send the right kind of message inside that organization. I think that may be the most concerning one. I'm not saying troublesome, but I'm saying concerning, because you know as well as I do, because we've sat and talked to Dan Quinn about it, how important that whole thing is to him, the brotherhood thing.
This was a star-studded lineup, Jeff, that really have a lot of issues to be resolved with their respective teams as they head towards training camp. Khalil Mack was missing for the Oakland Raiders. Aaron Donald wants a new contract with the Rams. Earl Thomas with the Seahawks. That might be a little bit different because we don't know how much Seattle are going to commit to Earl Thomas in the long term. And certainly Julio is a good example of it. David Johnson with the Arizona Cardinals. Jeff, I wonder if the way to stop these players, some of these players very quickly outplay the contract they sign, or they see guys after them. So like we saw, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, superseded by Kirk Cousins, in turn superseded by Matt Ryan. You know, the next guy's always getting paid more, and that makes the star player like a Julio Jones or an Aaron Donald a little bit disgruntled. Maybe the only way to get around that is for them to get a percentage of the cap or some kind of agreement where they're always going to be paid. You know, I want to always be one of the top three defensive tackles or receivers in football. Is that the only way we're going to ever see this? Or is this always going to be a part of the business of the NFL?
Well, I think we're at the point now where we're going to start to see how contracts, how imaginative general managers can be with contracts. And I think Spielman in Minnesota guaranteeing, you know, Kirk Cousins' contract totally, which is, I think, the first time that I know that that's ever been done. I think that's a step in that direction, and I think you bring an interesting point to it, Neil, about, you know, what about an elevator clause in the contract that I will always be in the top three, or I will always be in the most. I mean, Nick Saban has it in his contract at Alabama. He will always be the highest paid head coach in college football.
And right.
If somebody at LSU is going to make more, then it immediately, you know, triggers that elevator clause. Escalator clause in his contract, and he you know, has to make more money. So I think that's going to be those kinds of things that players are going to start to demand, agents are going to start to want, and frankly, general managers are going to have to start to look at, because, you know, it's like Bill Polian said, his number one job in Buffalo as the general manager was to keep what he called fiscal harmony in the locker room. And that was that, you know, so how do you keep Thurman Thomas and Jim Kelly and, you know, all of those great players that they had, how do you keep all those guys happy so that there's, you know, there's harmony in the locker room? Because, you know, guys get, it's just natural. I mean, guys are making, they're Pro Bowl players, and they're making less than a guy that's not playing at that level. You know, the players so much, really, and players so much see their worth in the amount of dollars that are in their contract, and I think that that's one of the things that, you know, we're going to have to start to examine, and we may see going forward. I think you're exactly right. We're going to see much, much more imaginative ways to keep the players fiscally happy.
They not only see their worth in it, Jeff, but even if their existing contract is enough to set them up for life, they see it as a lack of respect if there's a receiver that they deem to be inferior to them getting more money. So it's a respect thing, isn't it? They use it as a big respect thing.
Absolutely, because it's a, you know, it's a, it's an indication in the player's mind. It's an indication of how you feel about me. Mm. And, you know, again, I just think that that's, you know, that's the way the structure's built. And when you see guys that are getting paid and, you know, use the terms, the player's vernacular, where's mine? That's right. The question that they always ask. And, you know, again, that's rightly so, because they recognize they're only going to do this for a very, very short time in their life. And they are trying to take care of not only their families, but their families' families and, you know, their futures.
Mm. Could be a few training camp holdouts coming our way when training camps open towards the end of July. Let's move on now and look at our State of the Franchise series. We're with teams that were at the business end of the 2017 campaign. We'll start with the Atlanta Falcons. They went 10-6 in the regular season. They went out to Los Angeles and knocked off the Los Angeles Rams in the wild card round, and then they lost to Philadelphia in the divisional round, and they kind of had it right there, Jeff. A 4th-and-2 play on the Falcons' final possession. It was incomplete to Julio Jones, and it was a funny old play, really. Matt Ryan sprinting out to his right and, you know, just lofting it up, and maybe we can talk Steve Sarkisian in a second, but let's give you the tail of the tape. Offense was 8th in the NFL, 13th in rushing, 8th in passing. Total defense was 9th. Growing unit, this one. 9th in rushing, 12th against the pass. Jeff, that funny old play at the end of the game against the Eagles sort of summed up Steve Sarkisian's first year as offensive coordinator replacing Kyle Shanahan. It was they were right there, and then they didn't quite get it done.
Yeah, and I think this is a, you know, Sark had a rough first year. Mm. I think the expectations were so high coming off of the season previous and, you know, what Shanahan had done there as a coordinator. And, you know, Sark came in and tried to, you know, wanted to put his stamp on it, and they did some things a little different. And, you know, they weren't as successful as they had been the previous season, and that put some pressure on him. I think he's feeling the pressure. I think this is a critical year for the Falcons, and I think it's a critical year for Sark.
You look across the board, though, Jeff, when you're kind of trying to tick boxes for a Super Bowl run, and the Falcons were in the Super Bowl just a year before last. You want a franchise quarterback? Yes, they've got that. Game-changing wide receivers. If Julio is there, then yes, I think you can certainly make that case. You've got good running backs, decent offensive line, and the defense has improved and has grown under Dan Quinn. Just generally, I mean, this is a team that's not that far away, is it?
No, I think this is a very, very good football team. And, you know, when we start talking about this level of team, Neil, there's so little that separates them.
Yep.
And it is just, you know, who's to say that if they don't complete that 4th-and-2, that they don't win the Super Bowl? I mean, they are that capable, and they are at that level. So I think that this is an outstanding football team. I think Dan Quinn's done a great job of growing this football team. They're much better on defense than they were when he took it over. They're physical. They can run. And, again, I think that this is a team that's primed for a deep, deep playoff run and, you know, is one of the teams going into the season that we have to say – has a chance to become a Super Bowl team.
Jeff, I know we looked at a lot of aspects of Matt Ryan's play last year, and he will come under the microscope again this season because, of course, he's now the highest paid quarterback in NFL history. His numbers weren't the same as that Super Bowl run in 2016, but I think when we looked at a lot of his game, there was some tipped passes that ended up as interceptions. I mean, did he dip as much as the numbers might suggest?
No, but again, it's so difficult when you have the kind of, and I'm not saying it's a one-off, but you have that kind of almost Cinderella year.
It was
like
a historic season for them.
Oh, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Numbers-wise, offensively.
So it would be very, very difficult to think in this day and age, you know, that you're going to be able to do that run, make that run 2 years in a row. So I think that, yes, it was a drop-off. There's no way you can deny that. But I don't think it was the fall off the cliff that everybody, you know, all the hand-wringers, you know, want to make it out to be.
Mm. Looks like Vic Beasley is going to be not dropping into coverage as much, Jeff. This is, again, one of those things. He did a lot of that last year, and you wonder if sometimes they're overthinking stuff on defense because he's a pass rusher, right? So let him rush the passer.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things that has made the Falcons strong on defense is, number one, that they're not very complex. They, you know, they don't make a lot of mistakes because they don't do a lot of things. Mm. And that they let their players do what they're built to do. And that's why I think you're right. I think Vic Beasley, his number one thing is he can get after the passer. So let him get after the passer. I think there's a tendency amongst coaches to make it too much. You know, the more time you have, the more defense you put in. Mm. And the more defense you put in, the more the players think. And the more you think, the slower you go. And, you know, if you go back to Seattle and Pete Carroll, which is where Dan Quinn cut his teeth as a coordinator and, you know, built a philosophy, it's always been based upon very simple, but play fast, play hard, and be aggressive. And you can't be aggressive when you think.
And they're very, very good on defense right down the middle, Jeff. When you look, they've got Grady Jarrett, a defensive tackle. You've got Deion Jones, who's really growing as a middle linebacker. And then you've got Keanu Neal was one of the safeties. I mean, just looking at the talent they've managed to acquire there on defense, it's starting to shape up for what Dan Quinn would have wanted on that side of the ball.
And when you mention those names, Neil, and you mention those positions, what blueprint do they follow?
Yeah, Seattle's, right?
Absolutely, because when Seattle played such great defense, that's exactly how they were. Mm. Very, very strong right down the middle. And, you know, I think that's what they want to be. And, you know, I think they're on that cusp. I thought that in the Super Bowl, a couple of their warts started to show that they didn't have the depth on the defensive line and with pass rush mm-hmm. that they needed. And they got tired and couldn't get to the passer. Now I think they've upgraded inside particularly, and I think that this is a team that has the kind of depth and the kind of speed and the strength down the middle that is very, very similar to to the team that you just visited last week that had all the confidence, and that being the Jaguars. And interestingly enough, how were they built? On the blueprint of whom?
Yep, Seattle again. Gus Bradley tried to build the same thing. Gus Bradley preceded Dan Quinn as defensive coordinator there, didn't he? Then, Jeff, they always say that Jacksonville are London's team. I mean, we could make a case for the Falcons being the UK's team. They've got Alex Gray at tight end, Jack Crawford at defensive tackle, and a British coach now in Adam Durdy. We should all be getting behind the Falcons this year.
That's right, the UK Dirty Birds. That's and it's so good to see that. And you know, and I was so happy when Adam got his opportunity, because I think that speaks volumes to the work, not only the work he's done and the quality of coach that he is, but also for all the young guys out there that, you know, think about, you know, Neil, it's you and I have some historical perspective on this, and we go back 15 years, and Adam was just a young kid trying to figure out how to play pro football, and now he's coaching in the National Football League. So I think it's a great, great success story and a great, you know, pattern for young coaches throughout the world to recognize that this really can, if you work hard enough and you're good enough, this can happen.
If you've just stumbled across the podcast and heard the words UK Dirty Birds, just a reminder, this is Inside the Huddle. We are talking NFL, and we will just let's move on quickly. Jeff, I'm going to give them an arrow up. I still think they're an improving defense, so I think they're still a team on the rise. All these teams that we're doing today are kind of there or thereabouts. So you going arrow up, or are they kind
I'm going to go arrow up, but I'm up with a cautionary arrow, because this thing with Julio really, really, really perplexes me. And I think that it's going to be really a great opportunity for Dan Quinn to really prove what kind of head coach he is, because these are the things that really make you or break you as a head coach. When you have a great football team and you got a little bit of a, I'm not going to say an issue, because I don't think it really is that big a deal, but I think it's a perceived issue, and how you handle that perceived issue, particularly publicly, is really, really important. So I think this is an opportunity for Dan Quinn to really, you know, establish himself as a head coach.
All right, let's stay in the NFC South and move on to the New Orleans Saints. They went 11-5, and they won the division. They beat the Carolina Panthers in the wild card round. That meant they'd beaten the Panthers three times during the 2017 season. Then they looked like they were going to take on and defeat the Minnesota Vikings in Minneapolis until that Minneapolis miracle. just ripped the heart out of the New Orleans Saints. And just like that, it was over, Jeff. I'll give the numbers and then we can talk Saints. Offense was second in the NFL, 391.2 yards per game. Rushing, they were fifth. Passing, they were fifth. Defense, we always say they've just got to be middle of the pack to give them a chance. They were that last year. 17th in total defense, 16th against the run, 15th against the pass. Well, they were close last year, Jeff, and they don't look like they've taken much of a backward step, these New Orleans Saints.
No, and you know, you mentioned where they are defensively, and I think, yeah, they were in middle of the pack defense, but what you see on this defense is they're young, and they can run, and I think they're now starting to get some confidence, and I think that's so important when you got a young defense is that they gain some confidence. This is a very, very athletic group, and, you know, again, I think if Marcus, you know, again, this is going to be the issue to me is can Davenport come in and give them that other guy on the edge that, you know, it's really come down to you need two, right? And so you got Cameron Jordan on one side. If Davenport can give you just pass rush, if he can just be a situational pass rusher, I think this defense has a chance to take another step.
Yeah, and he's a player that's going to have, you know, quite a weight on his shoulders. A rookie, and they gave up a 2019 first-round draft pick to move up to take Marcus Davenport. We thought at the time they were getting in position to take Lamar Jackson, the quarterback, which would have very much been a move for the future. Jeff, this was a move which, again, showed, you know, we got Drew Brees signed to another two-year extension. This is a passing league. We want to get after the quarterback. We get double the amount of pressure if we can get Davenport and Cameron Jordan, and then we've got, you know, we've got Marshawn Lattimore patrolling the secondary. So it was an aggressive move, but it clearly showed that although Davenport is a bit raw, that this was a kind of win now move.
Yeah, I think this is one of those ones that they said, hey, listen, the upside is so great that we've got to take this chance. And, you know, you look at him when you watched him on tape, you know, a kid playing at a you know, I won't say a small school, but he wasn't playing at an elite level competition in college, and he just frankly dominated. I mean, he would just run by tackles in that league. And you know, whether you're playing, you know, I think it's called the American Conference is what they're in, but you know, you're certainly not playing the left tackles that you're going to play in the National Football League. Now, what they're betting on is that athletic ability. That, you know, the kid was a sprinter in high school, and you know, he's 6'6", and he's long, and he can run. He's got a great first step, and all of the things. Now, can you coach him? Can you give him two or three things that he can do well, and let him grow in the other aspects of his game? And if he can do that, he can be the catalyst to get you to the next level defensively. Mm. So, you know, I understand. I thought it was a little high when it happened, but I understand the rationale that Saints have, you know, behind it.
Lattimore's pedigree was quick to see in his rookie year, so, you know, no concerns there with him at corner. We'll have all eyes on Marcus Williams at free safety, Jeff, because he was the defender who kind of dipped his head to knock Stephon Diggs out of bounds and completely whiffed on the tackle, and off Diggs goes to knock the Saints out of the playoffs. But he kind of manned up to that really quickly in the locker room, and, you know, he's, again, we're going to have a lot of eyes on him to see how he responds to that considerable adversity.
Yeah, because everybody's going to talk about it. Well, as soon as they come back to minicamp, as soon as they come back to training camp, as soon as they come back for the regular season, all the questions are going to be about that. I mean, this is to the point where the kid had death threats and had to get off of social media because of that one single play. Now, how well has he managed it in the offseason? How much has he been able to cleanse himself of it? Because the reality of it is, you've got to come back and play, and you can't let that one play be the defining moment of your career, because he has a chance to be an outstanding, outstanding player. And I'm hopeful for the kid, because, like you say, anytime you hear that kind of stuff go on after, you know, after a play is to fault him for them not being in the Super Bowl, I think is completely erroneous.
Let's move over to the offense. There's probably not a partnership in the NFL, Jeff, that puts as much weekly stress on the opposition as Sean Payton and Drew Brees. But it's not just about them anymore. Obviously, you've got Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas is a moving into elite wide receiver category. No Mark Ingram for the first month of the season due to a PED suspension. But, Jeff, this might be the first offseason we haven't heard Sean Payton linked with another NFL team. He seems to be as committed as ever to the Saints. Let's start there with Sean Payton and Drew Brees and what they do to the opposition.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you look at Brees, I think in particular. You know, he doesn't fit the mold, Neil. He's, you know, he's a 5'11", they say 6 feet. I've stood next to him. He's not that tall. and you know, he doesn't have the big arm. He doesn't have the, you know, the arm, what as they say, that quote the term now is arm talent. He doesn't have the arm talent of the elite level quarterback. But man, oh man, is he accurate. And does he has so prepared when he comes to play. He is so dialed in, and he's such an intense competitor. And you know, here's a kid that, you know, played high school football in the Austin San Antonio area, and really wasn't very highly recruited. Had to leave Texas to go to Purdue because Purdue would give him a chance. You know, short kid playing quarterback, give him a chance, and had a great career at Purdue. And you know, it's amazing. His age and at his stature, he is still playing at the extremely high level that he played. But here's again a lesson for young quarterbacks. Study the game and take great care of yourself, because those are two things that define Drew Brees.
Mm. He didn't have to do it all himself anymore, though, Jeff, because we had two running backs last year for the Saints who both went over 1,500 yards from scrimmage, which was the first time that's happened in NFL history. And it's too simplistic to say Ingram was the battering ram and Kamara provided all the excitement, because Alvin Kamara could run between the tackles, and we're going to see that in the first month of the season. They're both kind of two complete backs, and they obviously took carries off each other, but they allowed each other to stay fresh. I mean, this is a good situation the Saints have got. No doubt they're going to miss Ingram to start the first month of the season, but they've still got Kamara there.
Oh, and you know what? I'm excited to see him get the extra touches.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what the ball in his hands, you know, 10 or 15 times more a game, what he'll be able to do with the ball. I mean, Neil, you talk about a guy who can create with the ball in his hand. he does some things that, you know, you shake your head and go, how in the world did that guy last until that? How could he not start at Tennessee? What were the coaches at Tennessee thinking? If that kid can't start for you, I want to see the guy that was starting.
One of the first games they played the Panthers three times. So I can't remember exactly which game it was, but there was a situation where he ran around the end and Shaq Thompson thought he was going to just level Alvin Kamara at the goal line, and next thing you know, Thompson is in the end zone, so is Kamara, and the Saints are celebrating. He's not just a speedster. He can lower the shoulder. And I think we're talking a complete back here, aren't we, Jeff?
Yeah, and I think I remember the play you're talking about. And not only was Shaq in the end zone, he was in the end zone on his back.
Yeah. I was giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that's the thing that you don't get about Kamara, because he's so deceptive. He's got such great make-you-miss factor, and he's got great speed. Mm. But when he gets underneath his pads and behind his pads, you know, he's an explosive person. You know, again, that play illustrated that for all to see.
Just a quick word on Michael Thomas, Jeff, at wide receiver. He's all grown up now.
Love him. Love him. Love him. And I love him because he's a guy that is so serious about his craft. Mm. And, you know, again, I like the guys that aren't about talking, they're about working. And you talk about a guy that works. He works his butt off and has made himself one of, and again, I think you're right. I think it's now time to start to talk to him or talk about him in that elite receiver category. And I just love the guy.
Wasn't his uncle Keyshawn Johnson, the old Jets receiver?
Yeah, how about that?
Who wrote a book called Just Give Me the Damn Ball?
Just throw me the damn ball.
So he's obviously learned.
Well, he's learned. You know what? But that's not been his M.O. His M.O. has been what? Just to be quiet and do my job. Mm. And, you know, but again, Neil, I remember when you and I were doing some film study prior to a Saints game last year for Sky, and just being, you know, not amazed, because it wasn't amazing, but just being really, really looking at a play. route. He catches every ball with his hands. I mean, you look at him and you go, that is a complete receiver.
Mm. So we've got Marcus Davenport's got to prove it as a first-round draft pick, Jeff. There's no Mark Ingram for the first month, but I still feel like this is maybe feeling positive about all these teams today. It's because England won last night in the World Cup, but I feel like they're an arrow up team as well. I feel like the Saints will go into this season feeling that their chances of winning the Super Bowl are as good as they were at the end of last year's regular season, and probably even more so. What do you think?
I think that they'll go into the season feeling that way, Neil. I thought this was a team that, frankly, overachieved a little bit last year.
Yeah.
And I think that this is – I'm going to give them an arrow equal or just a slight arrow up. But I do think this is a very, very good young football team. And when I say young, I got to take Breeze out of the equation. But I think this is a very, very good young football team. And I kind of like these guys because they got five of our SMU players playing on this team. So I'll take the Saints.
They win it all, Jeff. You'll get a ring.
I don't know about that, but at least we'll get a couple interviews.
Let's move on to our last team then, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They went 13-3 during the regular season, but they were one and done in the playoffs. It was the second time in 2017 that they lost at home to those pesky Jacksonville Jaguars. 45-42 they lost at Heinz Field. So, Jeff, it was a disturbing end after a team that won 13 regular season games. Here's the tale of the tape. Their offense was third in the NFL, 377.9 yards per game. Rushing was 20th with Le'Veon Bell in the backfield. Passing was third. Total defense was fifth. They were 10th against the run and fifth against the pass. Jeff, they're always a competitive team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we're talking such a high bar here that's been set, not just with Mike Tomlin, but with Bill Cowher and Chuck Knoll before that as well. I mean, this is always going to be a high bar for the Steelers. So even though it was 13 regular season wins, it was a season of disappointment.
Yeah, and you know what, Neil? I to be honest with you, it's been kind of a theme, frankly, to me. I think this is really a very talented football team. I think they still have some issues on the back end on defense. Mm. But it's a team that has underachieved in my mind, because you look at them offensively, and who do you know that can stack that kind of star power on behind an offensive line as good as theirs is, and still not be in a Super Bowl? I mean, I just really think that this team has not achieved at the level that their talent says that they should, I haven't studied it enough to put my finger on it, but I do know this is a really talented football team.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell was, again, a running back who could do it on the ground and through the air. You've got Ben Roethlisberger, who's won two Super Bowls as a quarterback. Antonio Brown, widely regarded as the best wide receiver in the NFL. Juju Smith-Schuster, Jeff, when targeted by quarterbacks, was a real factor and very, very tough to defend. And yeah, wasn't just a kind of a bit part player to Antonio Brown. I mean, he could be on his way to being a star in his own right. So, you know, you just reel off the names. And yeah, it's a Super Bowl caliber offense, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, you look over at the other side of the football, and there's a lot of star power on defense, too.
Yeah,
and
a lot of investment in young players there.
Oh, really? I mean, there are some. You look at that front with Dupree and T.J. Watt, and I mean, golly, they are really, really talented.
Stephon Tuitt, they gave a big contract extension to, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I obviously losing Shazier hurt, because he was such a playmaker for him. But, you know, again, you look around and you say that's a better defense. That's better defensive personnel than to go, you know, to give up 40 some points to Jacksonville in the playoffs. I just don't. That's shocking to me.
Yeah, and that's where the numbers tell a bit of a lie, Jeff, don't they? Fifth overall in total defense last year, but I think it, especially late in the season, and maybe this was the Ryan Shazier factor, the big plays were just being leaked at too alarming a rate.
Yeah, and you know, like during the off season, you know, you remember when they picked up Joe Hayden?
Yeah.
I thought, there they go. That's the piece. That's the missing piece, right? Now you've got a guy in the back end that can, you know, solidify that back end. And yes, he did help, but still, as you say, I mean, when you look at Cameron Hayward and you look at Stephon Tuitt and you look at all, I mean, you look at that lineup that they have, way too many big plays. Way too many big plays at critical times in big games.
Jeff, let's just flip back over to the offensive side for 1 second, because obviously, I'm not saying that it's a disgruntled unit. It's talented, but you have Le'Veon Bell looking for a new contract. You have Antonio Brown making public comments about Le'Veon Bell needing to be in camp, and we need to be making this run to the Super Bowl. You got Bell then firing back, saying sort of stay out of me trying to get my contract. You've got Big Ben making public comments that he's not happy that the Steelers drafted Mason Rudolph. I mean, it's not dysfunctional, but it's not a million miles away.
No, it isn't. And again, I think the, you know, like when your team leader makes the comments that Ben made, you know, I just does. I think it sends the wrong message. And you mentioned, you know, you mentioned the Le'Veon Bell situation and Antonio Brown, and they have a public, you know, spat about, you know, stay out of my business and all that. Again, those are the things that don't, you know, don't bode well for your future. And, you know, this is a team that is talented enough, certainly talented enough to make a Super Bowl run, but they've got to find a way to play better in big games.
So we've talked offense, we've talked defense then, Jeff. It's a talented bunch, so that might mean the man who has to push them over the edge is the head coach. Where are we on Mike Tomlin?
Well, I think when you evaluate that, you have to say, okay, he has been successful. There's been no question about that. But in Pittsburgh, in organizations like this, how are you measured? Who are you measured against? You're measured against Noel. You're measured against Cowher. You're measured against guys who won Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that's where Mike has to get this football team, because this is a football team that is capable, certainly capable, of playing that well and being in the biggest game. Now, again, there's a lot that goes into that, Neil, a lot that goes into that. So I'm not being critical. I'm just saying that that's the expectation. That's what the talent on the roster says you should become. You're in a division that, frankly, when you look at that division right now, Baltimore is struggling.
Yeah.
You know, Cleveland's not very good. So, you know, Cincinnati's struggling. You should win that division. That's not a strong division right now. And so you ought to feast on your division. You ought to win your games at home and come out of there with, you know, they should be, you know, a 12 to 14 win team. And that means you're going to get a high seeding, which means home playoff. And home playoff should mean a Super Bowl run. You cannot let a Jacksonville team come into Pittsburgh and score 40 points. You can't do it. You can't. Yeah. Not if you say you're going to be a Super Bowl team.
Jeff, just one last thing on the Steelers, and I think it's one of the big questions that will remain unanswered until we see them on the field, is have they really replaced Ryan Shazier? Obviously an emotional leader, you know, devastating injury for him. He's been an inspiration in how he's kind of fought back and has learned to walk again, and he is an incredible story, and it's wonderful to see him getting himself back on track. But on the football field, and from an X's and O's point of view, he was a sideline to sideline ball hunter, and now they've got to try and see if it's Vince Williams or John Bostic. You know, that's going to be a bit of a concern. So I wouldn't have them, as I'm summing up the Steelers, I wouldn't have them any more than an arrow sideways, you know, because I think that's such a big concern.
I think there are a number of areas like that. We've addressed some of them, you know, on offense. I think that Shazier, when you look at Shazier, Neil, I agree with you. Sideline to sideline player, had great playmaking ability. There aren't very many linebackers that have played the game in the last, you know, while that had his ability to impact the game from sideline to sideline. He had incredible speed for a linebacker. He was a, you know, violent tackler, could play coverage, and was an emotional leader of that defense, which is, again, I think where he'll be lost as much as any other place. For them to replace him, it's not going to be John Bostic or any of the guys you talked about. It's going to be, they're going to have to do it by committee. I think everybody else is going to have to pick up their game a little bit. You know, in their defense, the linebacker position has been and you know, probably always will be in Pittsburgh, you know, the Cadillac position on defense. You know, I think that the rest of them are going to have to, I think T.J. Watt's going to have to pick his game up in his second year. I think there's all, I think all of them are going to have to play a little bit better because you're not going to replace him. You're not going to find another Ryan Shazier.
Arrow up, down, or sideways, Jeff?
I think straight sideways. Yep. Straight sideways.
All right. Let's take a couple of questions in the mailbag just to finish off this week. And there's a couple of interesting ones. Good response from our listeners, as always. Let's start with one from Phil Coop, who says, fans make a lot of Madden rankings when they are revealed. How much do you think it impacts the players? Does it put a chip on their shoulder or give them a confidence boost? Jeff, I'm just going to say right now from the players I've spoken to, if you don't think they know their Madden ranking, then you are lying or you are deluded. They know, they care, and it provides either motivation, confidence, chip on the shoulder, whatever you want to call it, they know.
Absolutely. I think.
And they're all faster. They're all faster. They're all stronger than they're ranked.
Yep. Man, I tell you what, there's three things that they really pay close attention to. How much the other guys at their position are making, what their Madden rankings are, and where they rank in the NFL's top 100. Those are three things they care deeply about. And I agree, it's amazing. They you know, and you talk to them, Neil, and you listen to them in the locker room, and you know, not only where they're ranked, but how like the image is of them.
Yeah. But, Jeff, because they all play the game, don't they? They all play the game. They sit in the locker room. I mean, depends what team, you know, now. But when a few years back when I used to go to Jacksonville, in the locker room were these big lazy boy armchairs, a giant screen, the Madden game, and a ping pong table. It's all gone now. It's all gone. But some teams still have it in training camp. They all play the game, and so they all pay attention to their rankings and their ratings.
Absolutely they do. There's no question about that. Now, I think this is interesting, Neil, when we talk about, you know, we got the World Cup going on, and I think that next to Madden, the most popular game is not, you know, NBA, it's FIFA.
Yeah.
They absolutely love FIFA. So I think it'd be interesting to be a little fly on the wall and see if they don't have the World Cup tuned in on those televisions in the locker room.
Jeff, if they pay attention to ratings and how they're ranked, I'm hoping that Aaron Donald isn't looking at the NFL UK Player of 2018, because we put together a media panel in the UK. So you can follow this at NFL UK on Twitter and look on Instagram, and you can find ways to vote. We took a poll, a straw poll, of the UK media. We came up with the top 16 players, and we ranked them 1 to 16. And we had Aaron Donald was number 2 overall, and was going up against Odell Beckham Jr. And then it goes to a fan vote. And, of course, the fans voted for Odell Beckham Jr. So Aaron Donald, who you could make a case is the best player in the NFL, is completely gone. Odell Beckham now moves on to face Luke Kuechly. But yeah, it's a bit of fun for the off season. The fans can have their say, and they can determine it. But you know, players do pay attention.
Absolutely, they're highly competitive. They're going to compete in everything they do. You've seen it in the locker room.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's just the way it is. But I'm going to tell you something. If anybody thinks that guy is better than Aaron Donald, they don't watch. They don't watch football.
Hey, but they're all on social media, Jeff. It's just, you know, it's just different now.
Yep, that's for sure.
One more question. George Hackerman says, the NFL season is really short, and he puts in brackets, it means I get withdrawal symptoms for large parts of the year. Just 16 regular season games. Do you think it will ever expand to more, possibly with more breaks in the middle and less preseason games? Jeff, get your thoughts in a second. I do think eventually, I still think it's kind of quietened down a little bit in the last couple of years, but I still think it's a big thing for the NFL to get to 17 or maybe 18 regular season games. I think if it happens, you add another bye week. Maybe you have a kind of limit where a player can only play in 16 games. I think you have to carry bigger rosters, But I think the way the NFL will kind of look at this is eventually they'll say, look at how much more money you can make as a player, and here's your share of the pie, and they'll kind of make it look like it's the player's idea. But it's something that players have pushed back on a lot. I think it's going to happen eventually. What do you think?
I think it's going to happen, and I'm going to tell you why. I think here's one reason. We're already doing it up here.
Yeah.
We play 2 preseason games and then 18 regular season games, and the players have 3 bye weeks. And additionally, we are not allowed to practice in pads at all, not one day during the season.
Wow.
So the last padded practice a player in the CFL has is training camp. And I think that's the direction it's going to go because of the revenue. And I think that they're going to couch it to the players in that regard. Is now 2 more regular season games means more in the pot for you as players. And they're going to have to give. There's going to always be pushback from the players because, again, the Players Association, obviously revenue is one thing, but also player safety is another thing. And if that means giving up pads, which is what happened up here, that's the direction to go. And they will get another bye week. I don't think there's any question it's going to happen. 4 preseason games, Neil, is an outdated model.
Definitely. You know,
that's back in the day when you came to training camp and you had an 8-week training camp and you played your way into shape. Those days are long gone.
I think we'll see that quite quickly, Jeff, move away from that, because I think teams will do more of what you went and witnessed firsthand last year, which is Philadelphia and Miami doing combined workouts. You get probably more out of those things now.
Much, much more, because it's a controlled environment. You can script the situations. You know, when you leave it to the game, obviously, especially in those preseason games, you're not going to get the quality of work that you really want. Now, how's it going to impact? Here's how I think it's going to impact. You're going to see it make it tougher and tougher for the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round draft choices and the free agents to make teams, because it's going to be very, very difficult to get the amount of work, the amount of reps that they need to make a football team. So some of these guys that have turned into fantastic players in the league, frankly, won't be in the league because they just can't get enough work. You can't win your job, because in 4 preseason games, the rookies are going to play at least 2 of them, and that's a lot of chances.
Yeah, I think you've hit right on the head there, Jeff, as well. You can control it. You can control the environment. Let's say you've got a rookie linebacker who is, you think, outstanding in pass coverage, and you want to see, I'd just like to see him go up against Le'Veon Bell coming out of the backfield. The chances of that happening in a preseason game are slim. You can actually manufacture that in one-on-ones, in 7-on-7. So you're going to learn so much more about your team, because you can actually cheat the system in a way and say, well, okay, we're going to make sure that he goes up against Le'Veon Bell 5 times today.
Yeah, and you know, I don't care what you say. If you're practicing yourself, you can do your red zone work and you can do your situational football and all that. But it's not the same as when you're competing against another team or another player or another system, right? So, you know, like, for example, you mentioned when I went to Philadelphia and watched them work with the Dolphins last year. They got all kinds of, you know, down and distance situations handled. They got field zones handled. They got their special teams work was outstanding. I mean, the individual things that they were doing, especially put players in a position where you could really evaluate them in a more controlled, you know, it's like a science experiment, you know. Okay, you need to find out this, well, put this and this together and see what happens. Exactly what was going on in those interactions. And I agree with you, Neil. I think that is the future of training camps.
All right, we are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. Jeff, the BC Lions might only be 1-0, but you're in mid-season form on this podcast, mate. I'm serious.
It's great to have you. Man, it's great to have you back. It was fun following you, but it's always better when we get a chance to talk.
Absolutely. So we will be back next week to talk more NFL football. It's a bit of a quiet time in the league, but we'll continue with our State of the Franchise series, and I'm sure we'll find some discussion points. And, you know, England will have won another game in the World Cup by then, Jeff, so I'll be well happy.
Who do we got next? Who's the next victim?
Panama.
Oh, my God.
Which I thought
wait
was a cigar.
What?
I thought it was a cigar.
Panama, it's a hat, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, hopefully Although they made it at the expense of the US, so they can't be a pushover.
Well, hey, whoa.
Just thought I'd raise it.
You're talking about paper tigers in soccer.
I like the way you say, who have we got next? That's it, Jeff. You're a Brit at heart.
You got it, baby.
All right, man. Say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.